Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, there's nothing like starting things on time, ladies and gentlemen. And tonight is a very special night as we are here to, well, to discuss Halloween and some Halloween film reviews, television reviews, and so forth, and all kinds of other things. We may, you know, talk about things like, for example, from this individual. Or perhaps something from this individual. Perhaps something from this individual. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is that time for here. You know, first and foremost, you know, let's do this right. Is it the weekend? And let's get ready for the first of our, let's count down to our first review, shall we?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
All right, ladies and gentlemen. So we're going to break these things down one by one. And today is going to be a little bit of a different show. So what we're going to do is I'm going to give you these film reviews. I'm going to be giving you guys some ideas on some films that you could start your family off with. We're all in the modern era where everything is, you know, kids these days are getting younger and younger, getting into the horror realm. There are people out there, well, what movies do I show my kids to get them into horror, or what is something to gauge to see if horror is something my kids will be into? Well, I'm going to answer those questions for you guys. As you guys know, I am a parent, first and foremost, but I'm also a film critic, filmmaker, someone who is, I seem to be the last person on earth who gives honest reviews and holds people to task for not fulfilling promises like putting together a good show or a movie and whatnot. So I'm going to first, tackle one review at a time. Let's start with the movie that I watched just last night. And I want to be fair, I did not watch it in the theater, and I do plan on watching it again in the theater to give it one more chance, to give it another go, I guess you'd say. The old college try, I suppose you'd say. And also, maybe if I see it in the bigger screen in the movie theater, perhaps I will feel different about it. I'm talking about the 2022 latest adaptation to the Halloween franchise, Halloween Kills. So, I want to point out a couple things here. All right, so John Carpenter, when he did when we started this reboot, if you would, of this new incarnation of the Halloween saga. We followed Jamie Lee Curtis still praying Laurie Strode. We followed Michael Myers, still Michael Myers, and all of the people who have been touched, quote, by the Myers thing here. So I have a few things I'm going to point out, and I want to give people a thing here. I'm going to try my best with all of these things to be spoiler-free as possible, but there are some things I just can't, point out that are things I feel that you, the audience, should know, be aware of, PSAs and whatnot. So that being said, we have to go back to the very first John Carpenter film in the 70s, where we're first introduced to Michael Myers and Laurie Strode. Because this is primarily where this new series kicked off from. Went from there, which was the Halloween we all grew up with. What they decided to do is boycott anything after that first film and get rid of two all the way to modern day. So in other words, the revelation that Michael Myers and Laurie Strode were brother and sister does not exist in this series. And I'm okay with that. You want to redo a different story, that's fine. And you wanted to tell a different aspect of this story of this person or whatever. Let's look at Michael Myers in the legacy that the Halloween saga has been. And I want to look and compare, if we would. So the first Halloween series where we introduced everything, kicked it off, was in the 70s, made by John Carpenter. And John Carpenter was involved with all these other films as well. These three films that just came out, the trilogy, if you would. Halloween Kills, and then Halloween Ends, lastly, is how that goes. So in the first series, you know, like I said, Laurie Strode is a babysitter in this one night on Halloween. Michael Myers decides to come home, escapes from Methel Hospital and attacks Laurie Strode and her friends. Her friends don't make it. Laurie Strode does, starting the trope with the final girl, so to speak. And I want to start off by saying I have had the opportunity and the honor to meet a lot of these people involved in this film and the series throughout my time. And by the way, acknowledgement for Ted White, who passed away yesterday, I think it was. Ted White famously played the Shape, which is what Michael Myers' character originally was. And actually what the role is the Shape, not necessarily the Myers, but the person who perceives the body. And Ted White was a very nice man in person and a very large man in person. He unfortunately passed away yesterday, so quick condolences to his family. He was a fantastic human being. I had the opportunity to meet him on occasion, along with other people, including the very first Michael Myers, that being Nick Castle, who was the Shape in the first original, as well as the new Michael Myers, who got the torch passed to him, which was James June Courtney. Another genuine, great human being who was made for this role. Now, a couple things. So we're not going to look at Halloween 2 and anything after that. Let's just take the first one. So we're going to skip that to going to the original of this trilogy, because we're going to forget anything that happened prior. So no longer is Laurie Strode his sister. It's just a babysitter that just decided to stalk like a creep with no apparent reason behind it. And just wanted to cause havoc that one night way back when, and all of the people in which who were haunted by this night. So when Halloween Kills, which is, and then we had this reboot, the first one with Halloween, I guess, the regular Halloween. We're reintroduced to Laurie Strode, who's now older. She is a survivor of this massacre from Michael Myers and her friends. And we are introduced to the element of PTSD and honestly the trauma that goes along with having to deal with such things like what she had to go through. These are things that not a lot of people would ever have any experience in. These are a lot of things that are very, very Hollywood-esque, where, you know, Michael Myers is a human who is apparently just the embodiment of evil we keep hearing. He is the, quote, the boogeyman. In the newer adaptations, again, we're bringing back John Carpenter. We're bringing back Jamie Lee Curtis and Laurie Strode. There's your familiarity. And we kind of trickle in other people from the past, recast some people. Anthony Michael Hall would join the cast. in Halloween Kills, as he played Tommy Jarvis, who was the young man who Laurie Strode babysat all those years ago on Halloween night. And he grew up to be this, you know, young man who wanted havoc, who wanted revenge on Michael Myers for all that torment that he had to go through. So as you can see in my, if you can hear my voice, I'm trying to approach this delicately because I know a lot of people who enjoy the Halloween series and I know a lot of people who enjoy, you know, the horror element. And I love horror movies. I enjoy the slasher film just like anybody else. And let's first of all clear it up. Halloween is a slasher film, not a horror film. Let's put it this way. Horror is a class of its own, and it has a lot of subcategories. So when you say a horror film, that is a very broad statement versus other kind of movie genres. For example, a comedy is a comedy, but then you could add like the rom-com, which is a romantic comedy, or horror comedy, which is a new category, which is relatively new. You know, these are, let's kind of look at what a horror movie is and the variations. So a horror movie, the idea of a horror film is to scare the person, is to get that feeling of fear. And then there's the elements of a slasher film, which is what Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, and Friday the 13th would all fall under the slasher film, or go in, obviously, Scream. It follows a killer who goes around on a murdering rampage one night or whatever the case may be and racking up body counts. That's a slasher film. Because the three movies we're going to look at today are different genres, right? We have Halloween Ends, which is what I'm talking about right tonight, right now. We're going to talk about Smile right after that, and we're going to end with Hocus Pocus 2 as far as these three reviews. And I'm going to try to keep these kind of simple. Here's what it is, okay? We watched Halloween Kills, and, you know, everyone was pumped up. You know, Michael Myers at the end of the movie, he went beast mode, and as the town decided they're going to get revenge on Michael Myers for all the torment all those years ago, I want to point out, we have to be realistic here now. If we're going to forget about everything that we have heard, if we're going to forget from Halloween 2 all the way until this new movie when it rehatched in 2000, I believe it was, or a little bit before that, the newer Halloween movie, then in all actuality, the only two times Michael Myers would actually get, quote, the havoc that he has caused is, one, when he killed his sister, which is why he was, you know, put in the mental hospital in the first place. He killed his sister in cold blood at 6 years old, allegedly. And then the only other time was during that one Halloween night in the 70s when he escaped. And he killed a few of Laurie Strode's friends and tried killing her and then survived somehow with all of the craziness that ensued. But let's be fair, that is what Michael Myers has done in those two films. Now, are we going to believe that all of these people that, quote, affected this entire town are affected by these deaths by these kids who were killed in the original? Because let's be fair, he might have been this nightmarish guy, and it might be town folklore, but is he, in fact, as potent as he once was if you don't count all of the other movies in the series? Because it kind of loses its kind of pull on the town. Why is Michael Myers so hated by this entire town? I'm looking at things in a couple different ways. I'm looking at things realistically. I'm looking at, you know, characterly and story based. All right. And we're going to forget about all of the other movies that came between the first Halloween in the 70s in this new trio, if you would. Again, I'm talking about the Halloween 2000, Halloween Kills last year, and then Halloween Ends this current year right now. So because we're going to forget about everything else, the people who are affected are Laurie Strode, who survived the attack, the sheriff probably, who had to deal with the torment of that picking up all of the pieces and the investigation, which there's not much of an investigation. We know who did all these murders. It's horrendous what happened. And somehow he was allowed to live in a mental hospital versus being executed, which is something that probably would have been more of a thing back in those days, let's be honest. But regardless, in this new series, we're forgetting about everything that happened prior. So that being said, the people who were affected were Laurie Strode's friends, who were all victims. So she had three friends, I think, that were killed, and maybe their boyfriends as well, a dog that was also killed, a nurse, and possibly a couple other people. So now, are we going to say that the reason why the entire town has such rage for this person, this character, is because they are somehow attached to those five or six people? Because we live in a society where we see things like this and we feel bad, but we don't have long periods of gripes like these people seem to have. In Haddonfield, Illinois, which is where we're basing things out of, right? Okay. Even if it's a small town that has a legacy like, oh, we had we had Michael Myers, most notorious killer, but notorious killer. He killed his sister who was six, went to the mental hospital, was there for years until he escaped the mental hospital and then went, got out and killed a few more people and then went back to a mental hospital. Okay. So now let's break down Halloween in 2020. Laurie Strode's dealing with what happens when – I can understand Laurie Strode having torment and having nightmares about what happened. That's called post-traumatic stress disorder. She lived through a very traumatic experience. She had her friends killed in front of her. She saw bodies everywhere. She was attacked. And all of these things are horrific. She was trying to protect these other children, which she succeeded in. So that being said, and that alone, absolutely it makes sense that Laurie Strode would have some memories and would be affected so strong. The sheriff also would probably also feel very strongly because he was someone who had the investigation, had to deal with the police part of things. And, of course, Dr. Loomis, who a lot of people, depending on who you are, hold him responsible. Why was he in the mental hospital for so long? Why was he able to get out like he was? Why is, if he's such a dangerous individual, why is he so easy to be able to escape so easily? Because I'm going to tell you, it's not that easy in real life, and it's not realistic. If he actually killed five or six people back in the 70s and in their area, Haddonfield, Illinois, the death penalty was a thing, and he would have been executed. Regardless, and the fact that he is pure evil, quote, end quote, would just be icing on the cake. The devil's, if you remember the old, devil made me do it case with the Warrens, that was like one of the very first cases where they try to use that trope. And it failed. I want to point that out. The gentleman who killed the one person ended up, he still did his time because he still was seen as guilty. Michael Myers legitimately killed several people on unaccounted for and people he didn't have any accounting with. So he absolutely would have been executed. Why he was kept alive so long is going to fall on the shoulders of Dr. Loomis, right? He said, no, he needs to live. For why? Anyway, so Halloween Kills, we have Anthony Michael Hall as Choma Jarvis, and Laurie Strode And her daughter, by the way, in 2020, when this thing came back, Lori has a daughter, and her daughter has a daughter, and I don't really know what happened with the daughter's husband, but maybe she's a single mom, whatever the case may be, but her mom's seen as kind of a recluse. You know what? In all fairness, her daughter is someone who, you know, also had to suffer at the fact that her mother, because she had such a tormented experience with Michael Myers, because she was affected so, she had her own variation of nightmare. So I can understand her being tormented because her mother was tormented. So that kind of fell on her. But that cycle ends with the daughter because she chose to leave her mother behind, leave that part behind her. She obviously doesn't want her daughter knowing anything about what's going on or anything else going into the 2000 movie. 2022, Tommy Jarvis comes down, and the whole town is all upset with Michael Myers because, again, now with Halloween 2020, yes, now Michael Myers has gotten out. He's been escaped from jail, from the mental hospital again, and now he's gone around on a murdering spree. Now he's absolutely caused a body count. This is the movie right here where this would affect the entire town. You can't take what happened with Lori and hold that in off why the whole town is so upset and why they're so tormented by Michael Myers. It is because of this 2020 movie that when he came back, that is where all these people start to become involved. Her daughter, her mother, and then Laurie Strode's granddaughter comes back in Halloween Ends, which we're going to talk about right now. So Halloween Ends kicks off right where the last one. No, it doesn't. I'm going to tell you right now. I was about to say it kicks off right where the last one left off. That's a lie. I'm going to be honest with you guys. The way this movie started in 2020, this movie here, Halloween Ends, I'm going to try to keep this without, you know, blowing everything. But listen, Nightmare on Elm Street 2, it was decided that, you know, maybe someone else rather than Robert Englund should be Freddy Krueger. The idea was he was going to possess someone else and they would be the new Freddy Krueger, Master of Nightmares or whatever. And that's where the premise of Nightmare on Elm Street 2 came from, where Freddy would torment this one kid and he would be kind of Freddy's puppet, and he would become initially the next, you know, Freddy Krueger, right? Not him, not Robert Englund's character. So that is kind of a thing in this as well. And also in Halloween, in Friday the 13th, Jason Goes to Hell. Jason is blown up in the very beginning of the film. I can spoil this one because this has been out for many years. If you've seen this by now, well, you should just go back and watch it because it does have a great Easter egg that waited years to happen. But in retrospect, I think that it's important to realize and to acknowledge that Jason Goes to Hell, you know, basically the idea was that his heart, I guess you would, or the spirit of Jason Voorhees is inhabited by others. This Halloween Ends. This is the newest. This is the last. And you know what? It has to be the last. And now I want to point out some things. You can't go from here, because now it's just going to be, it's the trope's been done already. So this is called Halloween Ends, which is very appropriate because this has an ending, and it needs to be the ending. They cannot absolutely do another Halloween film after this. It's insulting to fans. Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode, she is the ultimate female BM. I'm going to say it right here, and I'm glad I have a PG-13 thing here on my counter over here. And I'm going to say it right now. Jamie Lee Curtis is the legitimate badass. And from talking and getting to hear stories from the guys who made this film, James Jude Courtney, famously, who just played Michael Myers himself, would tell you she is a legitimate tough woman, Jamie Lee Curtis. She is athletic, she is gifted, and she is tough as nails. And in this film, it holds up. She could perform. She could hold an audience. She can make you believe that she is a tormented soul, that she is a woman on hinge, and she is a woman that has vengeance in her heart. And she plays that to perfection in this film. There are certain elements of this film I didn't like, and there's certain things I did. I don't enjoy the beginning of the movie made no sense to me, except it gave us background into this other person we're supposed to care about, which I don't. I'm sorry. You failed the first aspect. One of the things that I look for in a film, I have four categories in what I believe to be a good film. One is the story. Is the story believable? Is it something I can get into? Is it intriguing? Two is casting. Are the persons who are playing these characters believable? Do I care about them? And are they worth investing my time in? Then there is the landscape and I guess you'd say the physical elements. Like, is the period correct? Is it visually appealing as far as, you know, where it's set? Does it look, if it's set in the 80s, does it have the 80s vibe? If it's set in modern day, is it believable to be modern day? Is the location intriguing enough itself? That's a landscape or location. And lastly, as a whole, the roundabout and the how it makes me feel is the last element, is the feeling that goes into it, right? Those are the four elements: story, casting, where it's located as far as location goes, and then the feeling I get watching it. So basing it on that, we're going to use this for all of our films or television because that's how I do it for everything. So the storyline. All right, so in the last one, Michael Myers just disappeared, I suppose. Just disappeared. No one knows where he is. No one looks for him. He just disappears, Michael Myers. That I have an issue with. I feel like if this person is as dangerous as he is, and if he's as lunatic, if he's this lunatic that he's claimed to be and he is perceived to be, why is it only on Halloween itself? The movie wants us to believe that he's just a lunatic who just goes around killing people for the heck of killing them. There's nothing explained of why Michael Myers is the way he is. He's just pure evil. So if that's the case, there should be nothing stopping him 365 days a year. It shouldn't be just one day. Because if he's as crazy as he is, or supposed to be, then he wouldn't care what day of the week it is. He'll just kill for the hell of it. Right? Okay, so that's one issue I take in the point with that. And in this movie, he just kind of disappears, and he's missing most of the film. And here we go with the second one, is the casting. And also involved with the story is also this element of where how much of it is borrowed from other films and how much of it is its own original, you know, introduction. And as I mentioned, without having to spoil it, this felt to me a lot like Halloween, Jason Goes to Hell or Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, where the horror icon, if you would, try to get someone else to take over and embolic the entity. I don't like this idea because it makes no sense. And also, the person they have, and now we're going to go into the casting. James Jude Courtney plays Michael Myers. I believe that he's a big guy. He's tough. Jamie Lee Curtis, I believe her. She does wonderful. And I honestly think that she holds this movie together. I think Jamie Lee Curtis is honestly the anchor of this film. And if there's going to be anything said about the entire genre, it's going to be Jamie Lee Curtis is the entire movie. Okay. She was the babysitter on the first one. We cared about her then. We still care about her. We're cheering her on. We don't want anything to happen to her. So that's absolutely a thing. We see that she's a tough woman. She breaks that old trope where, you know, these babysitters are just helpless and they don't fight back. Jamie Lee Curtis shows that, you know what, you push a person to their limit, they will do what they can to protect themselves and the ones they love. That is believable. Jamie Lee Curtis nails that. James Drew Courtney does okay as the shit, but how much of it is actually him versus this other idea? That I have an aspect of it. The secondary person who in the film, the gentleman character, didn't like him. I don't believe him. I don't care about him. He's at first seen as this nice guy who's just, you know, pushed around and there's an accident and then people have these nasty things about him. That makes no sense. None of that storyline adds up with anything. I don't understand where Michael Myers fits into that equation at all. And there's no comparison there. The general, just an excuse. It's a scapegoat for the other person, and that's all that is. I do think that eventually if you're bullied like this person is and tormented and people talking about you, that's something. But it has nothing to do with Michael Myers. It has nothing to do with Halloween, this storyline with this gentleman. So that doesn't follow, and I don't know about him or with him. Now we're introduced to the fact that now he's dating Laurie's granddaughter. Laurie's granddaughter, whose mom was killed by Michael Myers, seems to have a gripe against Laurie Strode for bringing this to the world. No. Laurie Strode is the one who continued trying to end this, and her mother, herself, and everyone else who gets in the way of her trying to end this prior to this are the ones to blame, not Laurie Strode. I think the granddaughter, in my opinion, seems ungrateful, and I don't like her character. I don't like her performance. I'm sorry. Jamie Lee Curtis is the only winner here other than the short time that James Jude Courtney is here. And when we look at the other thing, the landscape, there's nothing new and original. We're still stuck in Haddonfield. I don't think it has a time period on it because it doesn't seem to age. It's set in modern time, I guess, or is it? Because there's nothing like that stands out to say this is modern time. It seems to be stuck in this 80s mentality where there's, you know, a bunch of buffoons, there's no technology, a lot of the weapons are used are very basic weapons. There's no technology shown anywhere in this film. There's no evolution in this film, in this town, in this time period. What time period is this in? It's going to be that. So then the end, the last part is the feeling. What feeling do I have at the end of this? Do I feel like this is end? Yes, I do, because I don't want to see anymore. My feeling was they tried to do something, and I knew right away when the movie began, I knew where they were going to go with it. I didn't like that aspect. If I can figure out the movie within 5 minutes of the first act, then you lost me. I want to go for the ride on the film. I want you to surprise me. You're a horror film. You need to bring me on a ride with you. But if I already got to the end, then I lost the entire trip. Does that make sense? So my feeling was, I feel like this was rushed. I feel like this has ended. And I want to know if other people think that this is the proper ending of this whole franchise. And if this feels almost like that's it. Because I feel like with the legacy that Michael Myers has earned over the years, you want us to forget about all the sequels and prequels prior to this. You actually hurt your – I believe that you actually made Michael Myers less than what he originally had. Even if he had all these amazing kills in the first – those three films that he did with this new series – talk about the Halloween kills, and then this Halloween Ends. Because actually in Halloween Ends, we can't really give Michael Myers a lot of credit for those kills. And I'm not going to spoil things, but we can't legitimately give him that. Prior to that, I guess you could, but it loses its flair after a bit. So there's that. So the feeling I have, I guess I feel like people got ripped off if I'm a Halloween fan. I'm a fan of Michael Myers. I feel like you did a discredit to the legacy because there's no way you can continue with this without going with this other thing, and that's already shown to be a failed attempt. So I don't give star ratings or anything like that because I don't give star ratings. I think they're pointless in their own work in wrestling. Too many people use them. So what I am going to do is something that is more beneficial. When it comes to a movie, I will either tell you to give it a try. I will tell you to go see it. I will tell you to give it a try, or I'll say don't even bother. That's going to be the three ways I'll judge anything I watch from this point on. Would I recommend Halloween Ends? I think I would recommend it for the people who are passionate about this series. I think you deserve to see how this comes to an end. But in the same sense, I also feel like there's going to be a lot of backlash with this. So I'm going to leave it with that for Halloween Ends. Let's go to the next one. Smile, I just saw. Yes, I saw Smile late. And I have to ask my fellow film critics a question. Before I started officiating, I wrote an article for a newsletter and I did film reviews. And I'm very blunt and honest in my film reviews. Because I believe, first of all, I went to film school, I made films, and for the reasons I just described, I understand the hard work that goes into making the film. I definitely understand in the last few years, especially, how hard it must be, how much challenging it is to make a film. But that's not going to give me a pass for people putting poor products out there. It's also not going to give a pass to films that are just not good. So I'm going to be blunt in my reviews, but I'll do it more of a constructive criticism manner. So instead of me going on a long period of thing, let's go with Smile now. Smile is a film that came out this year, and it takes place, I guess, in this modern time. And it's about So how do you describe this? So this is an entity, apparently, that is attached to people who causes them to do horrendous things. And by horrendous things, I'm going to say, and just a spoiler, this is for sensitive people out there. And here's the thing. I come from the mental health world as well as the film world. So this film, especially for me, I actually took a lot of exception with. And this is probably why this film I had the most problems with versus a lot of these other ones. See, Smile deals with mental illness in a different way. And it deals with a very tender subject, which is, self-harm and suicide. And what it does is it borrows from other ideas that I don't understand why they work. So you're familiar with the movie or have heard of the film It Follows. I want to be honest. I have not watched It Follows yet. And it's on a top 10 list of everyone's, you need to see these movies list. And after I'm done giving these reviews, I will tell you about a couple of those issues I have with some of those movies on those lists and why I have issues with them. But Smile talks a lot about mental illness. So this is going to go a lot of this film is going to go over the head of a general audience goer. I think as a filmmaker, you need to understand who you're making the movies for, what the movie's purpose is. So Saw, for example, now again, this is completely different from this movie. Saw is a movie that bases itself on gore. It's a gross up of audience in the element of, you know, something horrendously gory and bloody is going to happen. That is a different genre. We talked about the different subgenres of horror. You got a classic horror, which is, you know, meant to scare you. You have the slasher film, which is someone stalking in a serial killer manner. You have the gore fest, which is the Saw franchise, the psychological thrillers. That's what the Saw or the Sevens or this movie, for that matter, are. And or otherwise, they're just remakes, prequels, sequels, or borrowed from another, you know, place, redone. And what Smile does is it's an entity nobody can hear and apparently or see other than the person affected. And it's kind of like a illness where it, okay, instead of me just trying to explain the whole story, we're breaking it down into the four elements so we can get down this quick. The story, it talks a lot about mental illness, and it talks a lot about self-harm, but in the most annoying and most insulting ways possible. It's very, I found it to be incredibly insensitive to people who have these issues with delusions, with hallucinations, people see it on a regular basis. And I had hopes for this film. There's also one interesting element, however, is the doctor that we're introduced to, the main character, which we'll get into after this, because remember, the second part is casting. But she is traumatized by something in the past, and she decides to go into therapy to help others. Now, that is an issue with a couple things. One, I have to, you know, break down the walls here. I do have a film degree as well as a human services degree. I worked in day programs with adults with mental illness. I've dealt with people with mental illness. I have PTSD. So these are things that I am very much accustomed to. I know a lot more than people think. And I know the different, I know that Hollywood can only do so much, but this is ridiculous. This is a bad idea, because what you're doing is you're shedding light on or giving life to something that is not a thing, and you're making so this, whatever this non-seen element is, it basically forces people to hurt themselves. But in order to do that, they must hurt themselves in front of other people. This is horrific. This is disgusting as an idea for a film, because there is nothing more painful than losing someone you care about. There's nothing more traumatic than watching it in front of you. And that's the idea there, is that haunting experience is going to haunt you for the rest of your life, but you definitely don't have to let it affect you to this extent. So that I have a hard time with. And the fact that the entity makes you smile, one of these biggest smiles you'll ever see, it makes smiling a bad thing, because look how many people, you know, there's so many people who walk around with frowns and don't smile enough. Now you made smiling look creepy. It looked like it's a bad thing. And also what it does, see, there's a term in psychology or in the mental health world called masking. Masking is, you might have really bad feelings. You might feel really poorly about yourself. You might have some dark ideas. You might be in a really bad mood. But because you need to go on with the day, because you want to be nice, because you don't want to offend other people, you put a smile on your face so people don't worry about you constantly, because you don't want to worry everyone else. You don't want to concern everyone else. So what you do is you put on this happy face and you put on this, you know, charade, if you would, that you're, everything's all great and everything's good, and that's called masking in humans, in the psych world, okay? But what this movie is the person who's going to, the entity is forcing the person to smile while they're killing themselves in front of the other person. And again, this is as dark as you can get it for an idea for a movie. that they made this a film. This made it to a film. And I've had film critics I have a lot of credit, who I have a lot of respect for, who had good praises for this movie. This is the second movie now in 2 weeks that after I've seen a film that I know to be offensive or not be good, these people have given them passes. Film critics out there, listen to me very carefully. I get that we're in the film business. I get that you don't want to offend other people. You need to give constructive criticism. You need to hold people accountable when they don't do a good job. If they don't make sense to you, if they're not good, you're doing a disservice to the people who count on your ideas and your visions, people who trust your intellect, people who want to say, well, gee, am I the only one that feels that way? You are alienating yourself from them. You're lying to your audience. If you actually went into this film and thought this film was wonderful, you're lying to yourself. Was it gory? Yes. Did it have, it was a jump fest throughout the entire film for things that did not need jumps. I've had fellow film critics who, you know, yell at, who are upset at movies like The Conjuring and Insidious for doing these jump scares. In this film, there are useless jump scares, a phone ringing or a doorbell or whatever. That's used as a jump scare. You don't have a problem with those things, but yet in Insidious or the other things, that's a problem. You need to be consistent with your ideas. If you don't like something, it should follow everything else. So that going into the casting element, the woman who plays the doctor, I don't like her. At first, she came off as very smug as a doctor and condescending to the patients. And then we find out, and as I knew, if in 15 minutes, again, into this film, I knew where they were going with this. We're introduced to a flashback scene, and we're introduced to this doctor who is here to help people. And now I want to say, I do have respect for people who have been through something hard, people who struggle with mental illness, who want to help others in the industry. That I commend. That we need more of. But what we don't need is people to forget those things and to then cross over these barriers into making it a joke. That is an issue. And at first, she came off as very intelligent, very nice. And this doesn't make any sense with the whole rest of the movie. This woman is Kevin Bacon's sister, as it turns out. Kevin Bacon's a great actor. He started out as Friday the 13th, one of his early films. So, of course, there's going to be a horror element to the Bacon family. Kevin Bacon can play a creep better than most people. I think Kevin Bacon has probably done more, has done more believable roles as a creep or a person who is a good for nothing than he's done someone who you want to cheer like in Footloose. But I love Kevin Bacon as an actor. I got to talk to him several times. Very nice guy. This woman who plays in this film, Kevin Bacon's sister. Just because your family is relative doesn't give you the right to go in there and try to do something on their on your own behalf. It doesn't mean it's for everybody also. So casting goes, okay. I want you to look at the casting. This woman is Kevin Bacon's sister. Done a couple horror movies. You get, so you guys remember the movie Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, the comedy? Other, not Harold, but the other, the Kumar of the group is in this film as a doctor who is this woman's superior at the hospital. What the heck is going on in this casting? What is this? So the reason I didn't like the first Saw movie is because they casted Carrie Elves, the star of Robin Hood Men in Tights, the star of The Princess Bride, the person who's only done comedies in a serious role in the Saw movie. It took me out of the entire Saw franchise because of that element. And having Kumar, who is a, you know, pot-smoking, wisecracking comedian in most of his films, and this role feels out of place and doesn't make any sense. There's a lot of throwaway storyline. There's a lot of ridiculousness that goes on. This one-time doctor who has witnessed something horrendous. This does happen. This is, again, an element of post-traumatic stress disorder. By the way, if you are affected this deeply by something, you will not be credited in order to work with people, just so you know. There are certain places in the world now, or there are places in the different elements that will prevent you from taking a serious role in treatment, in a treatment facility, if you are someone who struggles yourself. It's kind of like people who struggle from people who have horrific childhoods who want to go into the military, okay? If you already have post-traumatic stress disorder from other things prior to joining the military will not accept you because you've already seen your own personal war. The last thing you want to do is go to military and go into the, you know, whatever, and then there's more on top of that. There's a reason for that. And the same thing goes in the human services field. If you are someone who struggles like this, you can't be working with people who are also struggling because their treatment could really relies on you. And right away, this issue I have with it, this woman who is the protagonist, the star we're supposed to care about, she starts off, like I said, the doctor, and this patient comes in. She just meets this woman out of nowhere. Knows her for maybe 10 minutes. Soon she kills her. And, you know, during the thing, that's where she's, you know, where she loses her life sadly in front of the doctor. And that's what starts this whole chain. But 10 minutes and this woman's telling people she was her client. She was her doctor. And that wasn't the case. She was not a client. You're in an emergency psych ward of a hospital. You're not a doctor. You're not her doctor. You're just someone who was interviewing you. At that point, you were just calling, being a console. But anyway, so no, casting didn't work. Landscape and time period, sure. I mean, it jumped around. They talked around her past. We talked about the current and, you know, things of the past. You know, collage here, and it just doesn't make a lot of sense there. But you know, I guess they can give you the location. It's in New Jersey, apparently. Everything is New Jersey everywhere. I think it would be funny if none of this was filmed in New Jersey, but yet all the cars have Jersey plates on it, and everything says New Jersey. Yet I didn't recognize any part of New Jersey in this series anywhere. I don't know where they filmed this in New Jersey, but I've never seen any of those locations. And I go to Jersey every year. So I'm going to have to reach out to my friends in Jersey to ask them where these areas are. And the feeling afterwards is I felt myself like this is the end of this movie. This has to be the end, and this is terrible. I don't like this film. I almost fell asleep in the theater. Theater where I went to see it, there was two little kids in the front of this theater, and their dad was sitting a couple rows behind them, which, by the way, don't do that. If you bring your kids to the movies, sit with your kids during these movies in general. That's just a PSA on any R-rated movie. And by the way, because I'm a parent, in this film, you're going to have a lot of blood, a lot of talk about, you know, mental illness. You're going to hear about a lot of things like suicide. You're going to witness these things, overdosing, language, violence to animals somewhat. So these are not things I believe you should bring a child to, in my opinion. When we talk about movies you want to introduce your kids to, this is not the one you want to introduce them to. So I guess the end of it is I was relieved it was over, and it couldn't get over fast enough. That was my honest feeling. It dragged. I knew it was having to go that way, and just okay enough. So that was Smile. And as far as the three ways, should you see it, should you give it a chance, or just pass it by? My opinion, I honestly don't see any reason why you want to see this movie. if you listen to what I just described, what this movie is about, and you come from – okay, here's how I'll explain it to you. If you are someone who struggles with mental illness, if you're someone who struggles with depression, if you're someone who struggles with suicide, if you've had someone close to you take their own lives, I do not recommend you watch this film. If you're someone who works in the human services field, I don't recommend you see this film. I don't recommend this for children, but if you're someone who just wants to waste about an hour of your time, go ahead, have at it, give it a chance. But for the most part, I would say skip it and save your money and go see something else, if you want my opinion. So there you go. Sorry, but I'm honest. I'm not going to lie to my audience. I take this serious when I give my words of encouragement or my words of wisdom. And I'm not going to lie to my fans and tell them to go see this film because someone paid me to say that or because I was invited to a screening of the film. It's a bad film for multiple reasons, maybe because of the reasons I spent in earlier. Let's go into another positive one. Let's talk about Hocus Pocus 2. Hocus Pocus 2 is a children's horror film. This is the kind of movie I would introduce kids to. Speaking of movies you want to introduce your children to, what do you want to wean them into the horror genre? Hocus Pocus, the original film back in 1993, as they keep on making call and reference to, was a great film. I thought it was very pleasant for a family Halloween film. It talked, you know, we follow Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker, and was it Jennifer Nugini is her name, the other one who plays the other sister. She's also with, like, Sister Act 2. She's a very pleasant woman, by the way. I had the luxury of meeting her once. But you know what? Hocus Pocus is a staple of family Halloween. I think this is a film that you can watch. I think people do make this a tradition on Halloween to make Hocus Pocus on their, you know, family watch along list. Hocus Pocus 2, I honestly feel, you know what? I would rather watch Hocus Pocus than the other two movies I just mentioned. And neither one of them are graphic and gory and a bloodfest or anything else. They told a story. They had casting. They had a beautiful landscape, even though I do take some exception to that, and the feeling you get afterwards. So let's break those things down. Storyline. It's a familiar storyline because those people who grew up with the Hocus Pocus movie, we follow the Sanderson sisters, Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker, and Winifred Giugrini, as the Sanderson sisters, the witches, if you would, who this movie we find out why they were banished to the Forbidden Forest because, like always, the town folk didn't like them, and they, you know, rebelled against them, and they had them, you know, banished, whatever. That was me sneezing, folks. That's a real thing. That's staying in. Anyway, folks, so storyline follows the Sanderson sisters. Well, it doesn't at first. This movie, we have to be clear. This, we follow a young girl who is practicing in the Wicca religion. Now, I want to point out, Wicca religion is an actual religion, and there are real witches out there, but I have to be honest with you guys, when it comes to a lot of this stuff, it is a lot of literally hocus pocus. There's not a lot of truth behind the lore that is in this film, although there are very much, I do recognize the Wiccan religion itself, and I understand the witches themselves. As far as flying around on broomsticks and things like that, this is Hollywood. So there you go. Anywho, let's get down to that. So we follow this young girl and her friend, and then we find out there's another friend who seems like she's part. So, okay, so we got the geek and her geek friend who are the outcasts who, you know, want to, you know, who are studying the Wicca religion, apparently, who are very good friends. And we, you know, I'm introduced to another friend who clearly has a history with these girls. Don't know what extent, really. She's not really given a lot of airtime in the first part of it. And apparently it's one person's birthday, and it's the main star, the main protagonist's birthday, and she's going to be 16. Apparently in the Wicked religion, this is when you get your powers, quote, end quote. There's another gentleman, and they turn the Sanderson's house that the witches once had into a museum and a gift shop. And I thought that was very funny because that, a lot of the times in these historical landmark areas, much like the Lizzie Borden house, the Conjuring house, Annabelle house, and multiple other places, they will actually, you know, embellish a lot of these things. They will give you these elements and they will spook it up for you. And that element, they'll have gift shops and the bed and breakfast or whatever, just because of the lore that associates with the legacy of the story. But anywho, in the casting, we're going to go into the casting. Casting's spot on. You have these three young girls. Don't really know them from anything, I got to be honest, but they did a good job for what they needed to do. Do I compare them to Thora Birch and, you know, the other people in the first film? No, because you can't do that. That's unfair. These are, it's a separate film, sort of, with the same kind of borrowed concept. And actually, I think it really more digs into relationships and the importance of the family you make versus the family who you're born into. I think this is a great representation of that. Even the Sanderson sisters, as evil and as vindictive and as, you know, spellbounding as they are, they still care about each other as sisters, a coven, if you would. And these girls obviously have the same elements, so that's kind of cool to see. Anything that sheds light and makes friends that important is important because that's realistic. That's how life is now. Bette Midler does a great job as Bette Midler, and all these other individuals did a great job playing the characters they played years ago. The gentleman who played Billy Butcherson in the first one, he's the zombie, if you guys remember, he comes back as well. So you have the three remaining people in this film from the old. I think there's a lot of forced callbacks because I don't know if they actually trusted this movie to be itself, its own movie. Because they have like a black cat in the movie that pops up here and there that doesn't really have a lot of, you know, clearly it is not Billy Banks. If you remember, or Billy Banks from the first film, remember he was the young man who they turned into a cat in the first film. And then at the end of the film, he was, you know, his soul was able to escape with his sister and they went on to heaven or whatever the case may be. So we know that cat thing is not a thing anymore, okay? But yet there's a cat here and there's a lot of other throwbacks. It almost feels like they didn't think the movie could do its own thing, even if they had Bette Midler and Sarah Jessica Parker, these amazing women, and the gentleman who plays Billy Butcher. Come to find out he's a contortionist as well, which is very impressive to me as well. I think it's an art in its own self. I wish I could bend my arms behind bend my legs behind my head, but Billy Butcherson actually can. You know what? And there's a lot of throwback stuff, and there's a lot of, you know, side jokes. I think it's funny when you introduce modern. We talked about this, we're going with the landscape and the time period. It is set in modern time. In the first one, you'll remember when the witches had to go and take flight. You know, Bette Midler's character had a broom, and the other two had like a vacuum cleaner, I think. A mop and a vacuum cleaner were the other three things. In this movie, you know, Bette Midler had a broom. Sarah Jessica Parker had a Swiffer jet, which is one of those, you know, you use on like a wooden floor type of thing. And then also Roombas, which are those little robotic things that go around your floor that do their own cleaning. And what I thought was kind of funny is they gave those Roombas somehow their own personality, like they were like dogs almost. And if anyone who knows me knows that one of my favorite kinds of humor or cartoons are when you give inanimate objects a personality. So that had me one there. So Hocus Pocus 2, you know, the feeling I get at the end of it is, you know what, I feel like this is an okay movie. I felt satisfied. You know, it had... it did have a few songs in there that I thought was very funny. Great ways to spin some music in there. It had a lot of callbacks to the old one. Okay. And you know what? These were funny women. They were funny actors. I liked the interactions between everybody. So my feeling at the end of it is, you know what? I could watch another Hocus Pocus before I would watch another Halloween movie. I don't think Halloween could ever be done again. So Hocus Pocus 2 is okay in my book. It's not a horror film, but I did watch the movie Bad Guys. And just a quick synopsis. Bad Guys is an animated film. Features the big bad wolf, the snake, the tarantula, a shark, and a piranha, which I don't think gets any kind of love for some reason or another. And basically, oddly enough, these are animals that talk and have personalities that interact with humans. And, of course, there's also a fox. But regardless, you know what? Basically what it is, it's something I've been saying for a long time, which is something I was hoping to get into this episode, is how, you know, in these stories, in these, you know, backstories of a lot of our famous childhood stories or in movies already been, these people, these creatures, these things are automatically bad, but what if they weren't? Like the big bad wolf. I've talked before how I think sharks, snakes, and things like that are grossly misunderstood. They're, you know, things that people don't have a lot of knowledge on. They have a lot of negativity. They have a lot of negative views on them because of how the media or how Hollywood or how other things have perceived them to be. Snakes, tarantulas, all of these things are animals that people have real phobias of, but in retrospect are also vital to the ecosystem, are vital to, you know, society, are vital to life, and have a right to live just as much as anyone or anything else. And I honestly like the fact that we explored the idea. What if these bad guys were not really bad? They were just made to be bad by what others told them, like the big bad wolf. And you know what? It was an animated movie. I like the story. I don't really, you know, I don't, when it comes to voice acting, I have a lot of respect for those guys. They have to do a lot of work. So you know what? Voice casting did great. I thought they worked well together. It was a cartoon. I like the different elements. I like when you can mix humans and animals together and there's like no mixed or anything like that. And the feeling I have afterwards is, yeah, I was trying to talk about that before. So absolutely on board. I think it's great when you can say, you know, elaborate on something I've been saying for a long time, that sometimes stories, fantasy, and lore and media can sensationalize things and make them villainize things that really don't maybe deserve them to begin with. And so I like that one. That was one I didn't even write down on my list to give you a review on. I just gave it to you for anyway. So I'm going to give you a few movies on. So let's say you're a parent who wants to introduce your kids to horror. Maybe you're someone who your kids have had interest in watching a horror movie. Maybe you're not 100% sure what you feel comfortable showing. It's one, you need to know your kids. If you know your kids are sensitive, in the sense where they feel badly for animals, they're, you know, easily to scare or whatever, you need to know your kids first of all. So that's the first thing before you show them anything or before you indulge into horror or whatever else. That goes for any movie, really. Really know your kids before you get involved with exposing them to new things. Once you figure that out, let's say you have a kid who is interested in learning more about horror. Now, I want to point out, I have two kids. I have a daughter and I have a son. My son is younger than my daughter. My daughter loves horror movies. My son does not like horror movies. So whenever I see a horror film, the only people who will watch it is my wife or my daughter or the three of us. My son is really not into horror movies, although he has grown up with some horror icons around him, real life. But there are some scary things or some things that could get him into horror that he doesn't view to be horror, which are, in fact, horror movies. For example, Monster Squad, 1986, I want to say. one of my favorite childhood movies from the 80s is Monster Squad. It is a movie that has all of the Universal monsters, Dracula, Wolfman, Mummy, Creature from the Black Lagoon, and answers the question, what if they all band together on the one element? And then what would happen, and who would ever try to stop the four of them if they were ever to, you know, take point and join the forces? Well, then we have the answer, a bunch of kids with the lead actor and the leader of the group being named Sean. And yes, I might be a little, I guess I do have a little bit of homage to the character because he's named, it's my name, and he spells his name like mine as well. Sean Crenshaw is his name. The leader of the Monster Squad, Andre Gower, who does a great job in this film. All of the people in this film do great. It is a pop culture reference. It is a cult classic film. It was a bomb in the theater afterwards in video cassette, and after years and years later, it is a pop culture phenomenon, is Monster Squad. And if you're someone whose kids are getting into scary things or into horror, I think you should watch it with them, but I think, and you might have to explain a few things, but the Monster Squad is not as bad as some others, and that's a good jumping point for someone, maybe for someone, maybe 10 to 13, maybe, someone who wants to get into the horror. That's for someone who doesn't have a lot of hard time with language. And outside of the language, actually, in this movie, I think you can actually get by with a lot of it. I think there's some funny parts to it. There's some very adultish type things. But a lot of the Disney movies and Pixar movies have adult jokes in them anyway that go over the kids' heads. So most likely they would go over the kids' heads in this as well. But I think the fact that you have these kids who are in this film who are combating against these famous Universal horror monsters that are not, you know, overly too redundant, I think that's kind of a cool thing. So I do recommend Monster Squad for those parents, or perhaps another movie that you may want to introduce them to, Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park can be considered a action, comedy, sci-fi, but it also has some scary elements to it. I think that Jurassic Park would be a good gauge. If you have a child who's into monsters or creatures and whatever, if you can see that they're getting, if they can handle dinosaurs and they can enjoy Jurassic Park, they may be able to jump to something else. So Jurassic Park would probably be a good, I'm talking about the first Jurassic Park, not the prequel, sequels, or anything like that. Just start with the first one and then go from there. If your kids can handle Jurassic Park and there's no issues there, I would then jump into something like the next movie I'm going to recommend, the Ghostbusters 1, 2, heck, the girl one, or even the, no, actually, let's be clear. You need to either go with either the original Ghostbusters Part 1. You can show them 2 as well, or you can show them the women's Ghostbusters. You can't start a movie with the end of a – this is my own personal belief. I don't think you can watch something – in the, like watching Part 2, 3, or 4 or something without seeing 1 or the ones prior, to me, doesn't make a lot of sense. It is kind of a – it's a when I used to collect DVDs and movies, it used to be one of my pet peeves, or people who have, you know, Rocky 2 but don't have Rocky 1 or 4, or people who have Rocky 4 and none of the other Rocky movies, or people who have Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3 and none of the other Nightmare on Elm Street movies. I mean, granted, they're all different movies, but you need to have the whole thing, otherwise it doesn't make any sense. Ghostbusters, I feel, is one of those things. You can start with 1, with the original one in the 80s, or you can go with, you know, then you can introduce them to 2. Or if you don't want to show them that, you can start show them the girl one. I think the girls, the female version of Ghostbusters was poorly misunderstood. And it was also, I think, I honestly didn't have an issue with it, if you want to be honest with you. I actually didn't mind it. My son watched it. My son likes Ghostbusters, and again, he's not a horror guy, but he likes that. He likes The Goonies, which is another film that you might be able to show them some of that. There's some scary elements to it. This is how you gauge, can your kids handle horror? And then after you get up through all that, you know, the Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, Ghostbusters, you know, the Jurassic Parks, Monster Squad is a good one after a lot of those. And then possibly Jaws. Jaws is a PG movie, ladies and gentlemen. But again, I have to stress. Actually, you know what? Again, I just recommended Jaws. And I'll tell you why. The problem with recommending Jaws is, for me personally, like my wife, for example, she saw Jaws when it was new, and she will not go to the beach. She will not go swimming in the ocean. She will not go with me when I go shark diving because of Jaws. And despite how many things I can show her, despite how many things that, you know, you can learn, she doesn't want any part of the ocean. So the reason why I say be careful introducing your kids to Jaws or Orca or any of these things that have to do with animals, because you might have a reaction that you're not wanting. Maybe you don't. Maybe you want to go to the beach and you want to go for a swim, but after showing them something like Jaws, if you don't explain to them this is fake, have that conversation with them. This is not real. Sharks are fish. They don't have the ability to hunt people down. All fake. Make sure the kids know that. Have a discussion with them before you show it to them or during or after. But, I mean, Jaws is a film that a lot of people say, yeah, start them off with Jaws. It's a PG movie. It's not nothing scary. But I think that's actually not a good idea, because some kids who get scared by this very real concept, they know sharks are real. They know sharks are an actual fish. They exist. They're not like Bigfoot or these monsters they know that clearly do not exist. And partly what gives kids their, gives people their, you know, security is knowing that these things aren't real. These things are not possible to happen. And when you add things like Jaws or these things that give, well, maybe that could be a thing, or like a haunted house movie or something like that. Well, now you're talking about things that may or may not be able to happen. So be careful of that. So there you go. There's some films. Now, let's say you want to introduce them to something like Stephen King. And the easy way to do it is honestly Stand By Me. I've watched Stand By Me many times and can't say that I can ever remember someone not being able to handle Stand By Me. Now, why do I suggest that and add this to the horror element? Because this is a Stephen King short story that was written by Stephen King and was adapted to a film that is iconic from the 80s. And I think it's something that anyone can watch at any time. And it's a message that is great. And I think it's something that we all know to be true, even if it was set back in the 50s or whatever it is. The reality that your friends you make when you're younger, it could change over time, but that bond you have, it never goes away. And it's a good introduction to Stephen King, Stand By Me. It's a great coming-of-age film, and it is rated R. It does have some language, so you might have to explain that to them. But again, it's about knowing your kids and knowing what they can and cannot handle. Stand By Me doesn't have, you know, ghosts and goblins per se, but it is written by Stephen King. It does have a kind of a dark element. It has to deal with, you know, family and loss and grief and misunderstanding people and judging others and various other different elements. But ultimately what takes away is friendship. And I honestly think maybe that's something we need, is more things that, you know, shine lights on what it's like to have these social circles you have and how important they are for the rest of your life, how they will form the rest of your life. So there's that. So there's a few films for you to try out. So, you know, hopefully those will be able to help you in some manner. So I want to take a second to talk about just a quick thing. As far as, you know, way back when I first started writing my own short story series, the Friendar series, the character, the lead character, one of the things that he was commented about is his friendships. And he is adamant in seeing the good in people, but also being able to know the bad. But it actually explores something that I honestly believe. It actually asks the old, age-old question. Let's take Jason Voorhees, one of the most famous horror movies in the horror franchise, Friday the 13th. Knowing what we know of Jason Voorhees, it doesn't matter what incarnation it is, the remake or the old one, whatever, it's the same idea. The reason why Friday the 13th ever took place, the reason why everyone, you know, the whole thing had started was because Jason Voorhees was a camp counselor who drowned because the counselors were not paying attention. And again, this is throughout any kind of incarnation, this is always the way it is. It doesn't matter how you spin it. That is what made Jason Voorhees. He drowned in the lake. And when I had Tim on the show before, we explored Friday the 13th before. We talked about the horror tropes and, you know, investing in noise, which normally most people with the same mind wouldn't. But, you know, when you look at what happened to the first Friday the 13th, spoiler alert again, but this is, again, an 80s movie and one of the most famous horror icons of all time. So if you don't know either one of these, do some homework, go back and see those first, then come back and listen to them. Take Jason Voorhees, for example. If you were to take and have someone save him, simply just jump in the water and pluck him out of the river, out of the lake and not have him drown, would anything happen afterwards? Would any of the proceedings after that take place? The reason why we're told the Friday the 13th happened, the reason why all the killings started, is because the mother, played originally by Betsy Palmer, the original, poor Mrs. Voorhees, Pamela Voorhees, she was upset because her son, when she was a cook, had drowned because the counselors allowed him to drown because they weren't paying attention for whatever reason. But what if someone did? What if he was saved? What if he learned how to swim? What if the counselor had jumped in the water, saved Jason from drowning, regardless if he was bullied or not? Because, you know, let's be honest, some kids who go to camp maybe don't know how to swim. Maybe that's why you send them to go to the camp, to learn how to swim. And what if someone saved him from drowning? He didn't drown. His mother had gone on a murderous rampage to strike revenge? Probably not. And she did it on his birthday, which is Friday the 13th, by the way, in case you guys don't know. That's why it is that. But what if that wasn't a thing? So he didn't drown. She probably wouldn't have gone on a murderous rampage because her son would have been saved by this counselor who cared. And regardless if he was bullied or not, the act of someone saving him or putting aside differences would probably change his young mind to not hate everyone or at least be grateful this person saved him. His mother would be grateful the person cared enough to save him. So I'm not so certain if Jason Voorhees is someone who, if anything would happen, if you would have saved him, would anything else happen after that? Question you have to ask yourself, when someone dies, it is believed that they're whatever age they died that age. Now, Jason Voorhees drowning was 10 years old, right? So when you see Jason Voorhees in the films, he's 7 feet tall. He's a big, muscular dude. He's a huge. You got to remember, he's 10 years old. He has the mind of a 10-year-old because he died when he was 10. So these are things we overlook in the Friday the 13th movies. And these are things that I know going into them. But these are things that I explored in the Frindar series. What if someone saved Jason? Now, in my stories, I knew that I couldn't call Freddy and Jason by their names, per se. And plus, I wasn't selling the Frindar series. I was giving them to friends and whatever. And it was, you know, for fun. But I called them Fred and Jay, even though everyone clearly knew who they were based upon. And the reason why Fred is because I believe that looking at his backstory, how he came to be, what if none of that was to take place? What if, you know, he wasn't, his mother wasn't attacked by 1,000 maniacs? What if he wasn't abused as a young child growing up? What if he wasn't tormented? These are the what ifs in horror films that would have set a different trajectory. Maybe he wouldn't have been, you know, the Springwood slasher at any point in his time. So, food for thought on that. We'll explore that some other time later. You know, I also, you know, setting aside the horror stuff and the film stuff, and, you know, I have to tell this story real quick. As you guys know, I just joined TikTok not long ago. One, you know, I see my wife having fun with it, and it's something that looks like it's very painless and very there's not a lot that goes into doing something on TikTok, in my opinion. I believe it's something fun, something constructive. Whether it be, I mean, I'm not saying that it all has to be, you know, funny, ha-ha, and maybe you can use it for serious things too. And I've seen different elements of it. I don't have a problem with TikTok. I think it's very interactive. And as always, I'm always late to the party anyway. So I joined TikTok. I don't really enjoy the, you know, the women, supposed women who try to, you know, date me. And my wife also doesn't appreciate that either. But something that doesn't change no matter where I go, what I do, whether it be on social media, in person, in school, out of school, I don't deal with bullying. I don't like seeing people getting bullied. I don't like hearing about people getting bullying. And people who don't know, I do a lot of work going to schools, and I do a lot of various other different parts of various different programs and organizations to help get rid of bullying, because it should never be a thing. I believe everyone should all live the F4L way with love, care, and compassion, understanding, and respect for each other's differences. And I don't understand. I mean, I've done extensive researches on why bullies are bullies. But I do a lot of talks to schools and so forth, talking about, you know, how to deal with bullies, how to deal with the trolls, how to deal with empowering each other and standing up for ourselves in a positive manner. Because eventually you have to face them, or at least you need to speak up when you see it. You can't turn a blind eye to it. It is the old fallacy that bullies will just stop if you ignore them. That is a lie, and that is detrimental to a person. Do not tell, if your child comes to you and says, I'm getting bullied at school, take it serious. Do not tell them that sticks and stones will break their bones and names will never hurt them. And do not assume that ignoring them will have the bully leave. And do not think that simply calling to school and telling them what's going on or asking your kid, where was your teacher, is the answer. I think you need to be honest with your kids, have open, honest conversations with the kids on a regular basis from the moment they tell you that. I think you need to address the issue right away and nip it in the bud as soon as possible. If you are a person in school, on social media, and see someone being bullied or being made fun of or whatever, you have to take responsibility. If you see it and you know it's something's wrong, you need to do something about it. So, on TikTok, I see this young, I'm scrolling through, and now I got to be honest, I don't understand everything on the TikTok as of yet. I am not, quote, TikTok famous yet, as others claim, as others are. If you remember, I'm going to have Brian Delaney on the show eventually. He is a TikToker. He's been doing TikTok for a little while. He can talk to us a little bit more about the TikTok elements. I'm also trying to get Batical Datical on the show and his son Connor. To talk a lot about the TikTok world, because they're both people who do a lot of this, and I think they're doing great stuff on it. And, of course, me being the one who started the Icon Show with my son, I take a lot of pride in seeing people who enjoy spending time and doing things creative with their families. So when I come across this, you know, poor kid who's getting bullied and getting picked on social media or on a game platform, I don't stand for that at all. So I right away reached out to the family, and I said, I'm so sorry to hear about that. And I said, they have some type of game system I've never even heard of. but apparently But, you know, the cook is getting picked on. He's a good kid. He likes to, you know, make jokes. He does lighthearted things. His mother's a riot, and they're nice people. The Rainbow on their name is Rainbow on TikTok. Maybe I can actually tell you the names. I actually shouted them out last week on my show, if you remember. A couple weeks ago, I shouted them out that I said that there was a new friend of mine, Jake, and that's his name, the young man. His name is Jake, and that I had sent Jake. I'm pulling them up right now to actually tell you who he is. Terrifying. It's the name of the account is Rainbow G. It's Reignbowg. Again, that's Reignbowg. And she says her kid really wants this, you know, some friends, some positive people. People don't make fun of people who want to include them. And you know what? His family, you know, they, God bless them. They do a lot of great things. They have a daughter who has special needs and a couple other things. And my heart goes out to them because I know how hard it is. And it's awesome that you have parents who are so devoted to their kids and want to see their kids happy. So, of course, you know, if I can do something that's going to make someone happy, and if I can do something to spell it, they better believe I'll do it. But if we've got to take a stance against bullying, and you'll definitely know I'm going to do it. So I sent him an autographed photo and inducted him into the F4L as the family, you know, because the kid's a nice kid. He's very positive. He's very friendly and the poor kid. So we inducted him into the F4L, and I recognized him as an official F4L brother. So now he has a worldwide audience of brothers and sisters worldwide who are F4L, people who will not only treat him like he should, but, you know, will treat him the way he continues to live, with love, care, and compassion, understanding, respect for each other's differences. And now Jake, who maybe didn't have a lot of friends before, now he has a family of brothers and sisters worldwide under the F4L umbrella, who are, you know, always there for our brothers, no matter where they are, no matter how old, how big, how small, and we're always there for each and every one of us. Coming up, a lot of people are going to be getting their certificate. There's not a lot, but every so often I do induct people into the F4L. This year I am inducting a few selected people who have honestly shown and proven to be F4L worthy. Jake is someone who I believe to be F4L. He's someone who embraces the life of a friend. He embraces social media. He embraces social people. He treats people with love, care, and compassion, and respect for each other's differences. He's a funny kid, and I do employ people to go check him out and go follow him. He's a nice young man. So I sent him an autographed photo, and I sent him his induction cert thing. And apparently they got it, and they posted it, and I'm glad that they got it, and I'm glad it put a smile on the kid's face. It was great to see the kid beaming, and I'm glad that I was able to take part and do that to bring some joy into the kid's, you know, heart and life. Let him know that not everyone out there is evil and that there's good people out there. And I want to say that there are a lot of good people out there. And whenever I hear stories about people who get picked on social media, it breaks my heart. When I hear about kids who hurt themselves because they felt alone, because they felt like they didn't have anyone to talk to, I always take that so serious. I always take that to heart. Even if I never met the people before in my life, I feel so bad because I always wish there could have been something I could have done, even if I didn't know them. Because that's what I do, and that's what we are. That's what the F4L is. So I just wanted to share that story of, you know, why I became a wrestler, why I wanted to go into film, why I wanted to go into human services to inspire others ultimately. I came from a life, from a family. My blood did not have the F4L qualities. I learned at a very young age I had to be my own person. My work ethic, I learned at a young age from martial arts. My heroes I learned from television and films and so forth, music. And I study everything, and my heart is open, and I embrace nature, and I embrace what's different, and I formed the F4L for people like myself who felt like outcasts, who felt like there's got to be people who care about us for just being us, who aren't negative, who aren't constantly insulting us, putting us down, or whatnot, who stand up for one another. And that's ultimately why I wanted to get into the entertainment world, is to inspire others to do the same. So I could go to schools and everything else to inspire others that it doesn't matter where you come from, what background you have, what your origin story is, you are the Batman. You are the Captain America. You are the Superman. Regardless of the origin story, where you choose to end up is solely up to you. Regardless where you come from. And that's kind of what I stand for. That's the real life me. That's really what I do. That's really what I've done. I've always wanted to go into pro wrestling. I did that. I still do that. I still work in the thing. And I don't know if this episode I'm going to get into what it's like to come back into it. And I don't know if I'm going to get into the whole WWE versus AEW tonight. Because I feel like it doesn't need to fit in here. I don't feel like it's necessary. I can say it is. I hope people enjoyed SmackDown this week, and it's great to see that my friend, that people seem to like where we're going with some people I'm working with. And it's great to see that he has this indirect, and I've talked with him many times, and he and it is him, and it's great to see. And it's great to be back where I should be on the creative team and helping people achieve. I think it's important as entertainers or as wrestlers or whatever, to know where our place is, to know what our worth is, to know where we can be helpful when we need to be. I think a lot of the times, a lot of people think they need to be in the spotlight. They need to be in the middle of the ring. They need that. I don't have that. I believe that I have a mind that I can help others achieve what they want to, embracing them, empowering them, giving them a good storyline, giving them a good character based on, giving them something to latch onto that is them, that the fans can interact with, good or bad. That is my gift that I can give to others. Giving young rookie talk, giving rookie wrestlers ways on how to talk and do promos, that's something that I can do well. I got that training from Kowalski, and I would do that again in a heartbeat to others, because I think that telling a story, being able to not only cut a promo, to talk, anybody can go out into a ring and just say words, but you need to make sure people believe what you're going to say. You can say, well, I'm going to go out there and beat you up, or you can say, I'm going to go to the ring, and I'm going to take my fist and slam it into your face. That seems a little bit more believable, right? Or, you know, a promo or talking is something I just have a natural for. You got to be good or bad. So watch this. Jazz Fitness promo versus a Jazz Vengeance promo, which, remember, Jazz Vengeance is the good guy, the voice of the people, versus Jazz Fitness is a self-centered, egocentric, over-hyped, you know, unfit fitness guru is Jazz Fitness. He's the opposite of Jazz Vengeance. He's a heel, okay? So here's a Jazz Vengeance, the good guy promo. I have come here tonight. I have heard what you said about my town. You sit here and you have the audacity to sit here and spew out all the filth on my town? Not on my watch, ass clown. This is my home. This is my ring. No one spits in my home. And here's what I'm going to say. You shoot your mouth off again about my city. You talk about my neighbors the way you did again. And I swear to you. I swear to you. You're not going to have to worry about me jumping out of the audience. You're not going to have to worry about me jumping out of the black. Lights aren't going to go out. The lights aren't going to go on. They're not going to jump you from behind. They're not going to jump in from the audience. My music is going to hit. I'm going to walk to this ring. I'm going to walk up to you, and I'm going to knock you on your butt or ass, depending on which the audience is. And then when I knock you on your ass and you're lying on the floor, I'm going to ask the referee to tell you to tell Tinkerbell, vengeance got served. Vengeance comes for all. And he just got jazzed by vengeance. That is a Jazz Vengeance promo. A Jazz Fitness promo, a heel, is the opposite. A bad guy, right? Okay. So I came to this city here, and I see all of these fat and ugly. Listen, I walked into this city, and first and foremost, the Richter scale shifted a lot. I saw a cow eating contest, and I expected to see cows, not a bunch of you people. Anyway, I am the one with the bulging biceps, the perfect pecs, and the washboard abs. Bow and worship the greatness that is Jazz Fitness. You've all paid money to come see me today. You can boo me all you want. You can say whatever you want. This fat guy here, this toothless hag over here, this little punk right over here. You guys can mock me all you want. You can say whatever you want, but here's the reality of it. You paid money for me to come here today. The fact of the matter is, the only reason you paid to come here today is because I'm standing in this ring right now. You didn't come here for any of these other nobodies out back. You didn't come here for these hacks. You came here because you wanted to see the best, and you're looking at it. You've got your $10 worth. You know nothing. Know nothing. Has been, never will be peons. I'm going back to LA Fitness, California, where I belong. Well, you maggots, you morons can sit here and dwell on the fact that you're way down here while I'm way above all of you. You just got jazzed by fitness. So that's a Jazz Fitness promo. Those are both off the top of my head, not written, because that's how a promo should go. And you can probably tell that because I wasn't prepared and I just did it. This is what pro wrestling needs, is storylines and people who can just tell stories and talk believable and not use long-worded issues, not long story, whatever. When it comes to the war between AEW and WWE, listen, and I'm not trying to be, I know I'm a little partial now, but even if I wasn't, I could have gone and said, hey, AEW, you know, I can write storylines. I can help you. But here's the thing. I have integrity. I have respect for the business. I have respect for the hard work that the people before me, the people I am, and the people are in it now. This is not a shoot. This is not a promo. This is me personally. The wrestling business helped get me through a lot of things in my life. They helped me become who I am. They gave me a first goal to work towards. And if wrestling today was wrestling then, I wouldn't have had that. I would not look up to people like Adam Cole and Kenny Omega and the Young Twerks. Young Bucks. I wouldn't look up to these people. They're nothing to me. I know Adam Cole might, a lot of people might, wait a minute, why did you include Adam Cole in that? Because he went over there a lot. He hangs out with these people who are not trained professionally. Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, are famous for being backyard wrestlers, learning on their trampolines in their backyard, running their own trampoline backyard wrestling fed. And they got the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars to hire them as their executives. Because he is a clownfish. And he's oblivious. He doesn't want to listen. They don't want to listen. Let me tell you how great AEW is. I know this is going to be very harsh, and this is honest truth. Again, this is not me working for the other. This is the honest truth. Being looking at both things, neither one has been stellar. I haven't watched either one until I was offered to come back. Until I was told, we would like you to return, we need you back. I had no intention of ever watching for a long while until it was fixed. Listening to other people who I respect in the business of what is still going on, I had no interest in any of it. On either company, WWE, AEW, is Impact even a thing anymore? Okay, those elements. You look at AEW and WWE, it's apples and oranges. People over in AEW had this vision it was going to be something else. They're going to be able to be themselves, have their creative freedom. Look at where they are now. You have people like the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega who are not properly trained as wrestlers, not properly trained in a wrestling school by people who know what they're doing. You give them title belts. You have people who are properly trained and those who are not go into the ring with these people. And you wonder why you have so many injuries. Tony Khan, the owner of AEW, I shake my head at him. He is a wrestling fan who should just stick to getting his action figures or, heck, go get a wrestling game and do it on there because it's safer than doing what you're doing now. He says, I have all this money, so I'm going to go and you are the most spoiled brat I've ever heard. Because you have all this money in the world, you think you can run a wrestling company? You've done a piss-poor job of it, Tony. You made a mockery of the wrestling business. You call yourself a fan, but you spit on the integrity of the wrestling business. You spit on the hard work of the people who were before me. You spit on the people who I have bled with in the ring. You spit on the injuries that I have sustained to entertain people. And I am properly trained. I went to wrestling school. I listened to the people who were before me because I have respect for the wrestling business. Tony Khan, you're a jackass. Yeah, I just said that on this show. Completely different left field, didn't it? You know why? Because someone has to be accountable. And since everyone else wants to blame everything on people like Jim Cornette and, you know, all these other people who tell you the truth, instead you want to listen to hacks like Dave Meltzer, and who's never done anything in pro wrestling. You want to listen to these other idiots who blow smoke up your ass. Stop. You're insulting my business. You're insulting the wrestling world. Tony Khan. I'm shaking my head again. Look at all of the injured people on your roster right now. Look at the shape your company is in right now. How dare you? How dare you call yourself a wrestling company? How dare you endanger the lives of other people in front of dozens of fans who don't know any better and lie to their faces? And then you are so full of yourself that you can't admit that you are wrong. Oh, fans really do like our stuff. That's just fake bots. Are you kidding me? I really don't have negative opinions on AEW. They just, you know, they're fake. They're just people who want to get things. They're just bots. No, I'm not a bot. I'm a real person. I don't like AEW. I've not watched AEW. I've heard plenty of things. My wife watched an episode of one of your shows. It was during the, quote, Owen Hart Memorial Tournament. Owen Hart Wrestling Tournament. That his wife was in the audience for. The main event was Darby Allin and some other whack job in the main event. In that match, there was all kinds of ridiculous stunts being done, people going through tables and flying around the ring. I sit here with my mouth open. And I sat there looking over my wife's shoulder as this is going on. And I asked the question, what the heck is wrong with you? You name a tournament after someone who lost their life because of a tragic accident for something that shouldn't have been done. Oh, I remember it was Sting. Sting is who was in this match. And Sting is the reason why Vince McMahon had the idea to put Owen Hart in the rafters. You insensitive, self-indulgent, self-righteous, spoiled brat of a human. Why do I have to be the one to point that out? Of course, no one listens to this show as much as everyone else. But don't think that I am not oblivious to it. Don't think it went unnoticed. So CM Punk, who is someone who I've known for a long time, I was fortunate enough to be his tag team partner in my early days of Ring of Honor. I got to know Punk very well. One of the things we both agree on is the straight edge life. We were the original straight edge society in Ring of Honor, because I said that would be good for your company. The thanks for doing that, by the way, is your other dim-witted employees who do not light a candle to CM Punk, who have not done any of the... CM Punk went to wrestling school. CM Punk bled up and down the road like a wrestler should. CM Punk has the ability to say that he is a wrestler because he is a wrestler. He can cut a promo, much like myself. One of the reasons, again, we got along so well. He beats to his own drum because he can. You reward this guy, and you have such a great job, Joe, taking care of your company that not only do your other employees who are not as distinguished as him, who don't have his experience, who aren't trained, not only do they get into a fight with him and his friend and his buddy, you suspend all of them. You have another employee who first spits in the face of older wrestlers and says he doesn't need advice from the old timers. He goes out on national television, breaks character, and goes off rogue on live television, attacks CM Punk on the microphone. And you're such a great booker, such a great businessman. Your smart decision is to reward him with a title match over and over again since Punk and the other guys are suspended. This is the guy that started that, you moron. And you reward him by giving him a title match, by giving him an important role. Fire his ass. Are you kidding me? Tony Khan's dad hears this. I should send this. Someone send this video, this podcast to Tony Khan's dad, Sai San Khan. Hospitalize your son. He needs help. He's either overworked or is getting involved with things he should not be. He is pissing away your legacy and your fortune. He is going to make a mockery of family name. So I know maybe those things are not something that would appeal to most people, but you know what? A man's legacy is his own. A family legacy is his own. San Khan, you have built a fortune over whatever you've done. Your son is going to piss it away by doing what he's doing with this wrestling fiasco that he calls wrestling right now. Your son needs serious help right now. He is not rational. He's not surrounding himself with the right people. He needs to get a rehab. He needs to be rehabilitated. He needs to go to a hospital. He needs an evaluation immediately. He is not rational. He is wasting his fortune. He is wasting his potential, and he is spitting on your family legacy. And I don't care what culture you're in or what amount of money you have. When it comes to a man's pride and a family's name, that right there should be something worth looking into. Maybe you don't care about your son. I think you can't. Being a father, I find that hard to believe. I know that you're a good dad who wants your son to succeed. You want your son to have an opportunity. Your son is making a mockery out of life. He's making a mockery out of your name. He's doing the old, I'm rich, ha, ha, ha. You need to send your son the message that you're sending to every other person. Send him to boarding school, being in rehab probably somewhere for a long rest that he needs. And I'm sorry if I sound personal with this, because I am. And I'm not saying that WWE's stuff has been perfect. It's definitely not. It's been cringy, to say the least. I have not enjoyed anything up into either one. But what AEW has done has been detrimental. And how dare anyone back this? How dare anyone be blind to indulge this as wrestling? And I shake my head. I made predictions on a show way before they even had a television show. I keep saying I have said it on YouTube years ago when they first didn't even have an episode show yet. I said the things they needed to do, the things they shouldn't do. If they did these things, this would be the outcome. I said this is what they should do and this would be good for them. Years later, they did all those things, and years later, I was right again. Jim Cornette is not the only one who has opened his eyes. He can see the facade in front of him. I do wish Jim Cornette woke up quicker to the destruction that Dave Meltzer has caused. Meltzer, I wish. Oh, I wish. If I could just talk to Dave Meltzer, I would love to ask him what he is thinking. How about hospitalizing Dave Meltzer while we're at it? He needs some help too. If this is the wrestling he thinks is good wrestling, then he needs to be evaluated too. So that's what I'm going to say about that. And I'm sorry, and I'm not going to end on a bad note. So ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say that if you know someone who's struggling with any kind of an issue at all, you know someone's down and out, you know someone's struggling, people have down times, people have hard times, reach out to your friends, reach out to someone you haven't talked to in a long time, reach out to someone if you think that they may be having a hard time. Even if they're not, say hello, check in with your loved ones. October is traditionally a very hard month for me. I've done a pretty good job ignoring the fact we're in October. Until I mentioned that it was October, so now I know it's in October. And I've done a good job distracting myself with other activities. In all honesty, it's because of my support of my friends, my fans, my family, that I'm able to do that. So with 90 seconds, ladies and gentlemen, you can find me on all my social media at F4L Icon, SEANJAZZSTEVENS. That is on Instagram. That's on one, by the way. F4L Icon, Sean Jan Stevens on Instagram. That is the F4L Icon, Sean Jazz Stevens on TikTok. That is the Icons of the F4L on YouTube. And that is WOW Dream Matches, DREAMMATCS at gmail.com, should you want to be a guest on the show or give me your thoughts. And everyone, no matter where you are, what you're doing, may all your dreams come true. Peace for now from the F4L headquarters.